Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel. Joel Condon is here. Dennis Dick is here. The whole gang is here. You're here as well. Good morning, everyone in the chat. Matty A, Zippity Tom, Dino, RM, Howard, Alt, Raul, Bill, Red Rum, Deb. Who was the first one here this morning? It was Ramesh. Ramesh, good morning, or good afternoon, or wherever in the world you are. Happy Tuesday. Guys, what a turnaround we had yesterday. It was a rip-roaring rally into the close. We will talk about that and more on today's show. We'll also be joined by Jeffrey Hirsch, editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. So you know what to do. Hit that like button, and let's roll that intro.
This is Pre-Market Prep with Joel Condon, Dennis Dick, and Spencer Israel.
Let's bring on Joel. Let's bring on Dennis. How are we doing, fam? What's going on?
Doing well. Doing well. Still almost 100 points off that low from yesterday. Up nine handles, 71 and a quarter. Pre-market high, 88 and a quarter. That's almost halfway back of that break. Also right up there with Thursday's close. Pre-market low, 53 and a quarter. I don't know why it stopped at 53 and a quarter. I don't have anything there. Crude up $1.20, $79.44. TradeTheRange.com and gold back over 1800, up 820 at 1807. Silver having a good day, up 20 cents, 22.65. Bitcoin kind of doing the old 40,000 level support like it did at 45 until it broke through. But let's see if 40 is the real low. And Ethereum, that's bouncing back too. That's up $41.50 to $31.23. Well, it can't be turnaround Tuesday because it was manic Monday. And wow, we kind of went down on no news and we kind of came back on no news, Triple D.
So, chop! It's the word of 2022 and it continues. And how do you play choppy markets? You buy dips, you sell rips, you short rips, you buy dips. And that's all you do. The day trading has been phenomenal. The swing trading, there's no trends. So it's tough. I mean, you do little trades, but they're mostly day trades. Even your swing trades turn into day trades right now. So day trading, great environment. Swing trading, obviously, there's not a lot of follow through and a lot of moves. And long-term investing, well, the portfolio just keeps getting chopped around because I don't touch it. So I think if you're, you know, so inclined, you bought the dip yesterday, maybe get a little bit of follow through here today, but we got a lot of risk all of a sudden because you got Powell going to speak. So you know what he's going to say.
You don't know.
So do you want to just take a ride, you know, and you buy SPY yesterday at 457, 458, gives you 90 handles. You're not going to book that. I'd book it before Powell starts speaking. I think some money managers will book it before he starts speaking. So I'd sell the rip.
And IWM off 40 cents. I forgot to include that in there for you. But yeah, I mean, it's only a confirmation hearing, right? So we all know he's back in. But, you know, the Q&A is going to start and they're going to say something about it. Now that you have, Jamie Dimon now pounding the table on 4 interest rate hikes and you have Goldman Sachs saying the same thing. I mean, interest rate hikes, man. Just what about lightening up those bonds? Are they going to kill the market by selling the bonds first? Then, They may not want to raise interest rates that much.
No,
but,
there's almost zero chance. So I'll go against Goldman and against JP Morgan. I think there's almost zero chance that we're going to get 4 interest rate hikes, because unless the market takes it in stride and continues to pop up. But if they start raising and then raising and then raising, the market starts rolling over, they'll back off. So again, the Fed is not data dependent. It is market dependent. If the market rolls over enough, they'll back down. I don't think the market can handle a crazy amount of rate hikes. I think it can handle 1. I think it can handle 2. I think they get to the 3rd one. You know, we're getting midway through the year and they're raising for the 3rd time. I think the market says, okay, enough is enough, and starts selling off. And then they back it down. So I don't think it's going to happen unless the market can really take it in stride and we continue to make all-time highs in a rising interest rate environment, which we countered every textbook, countered a logic, which is what is working perfectly right now. The logic trade continues to work. You know, stocks that don't make money, oh yes, they had a nice dead cat bounce yesterday, but don't get too excited because they were way oversold. I wouldn't be just jumping in and throwing all these stocks to my long-term portfolio, because still valuations are not attractive. And I think there's a long, hard pathway for these stocks still going forward. So I can just play the chop, man.
Yeah, and people that are in the chat are saying, well, it's the banks calling for 4 inches raise hikes, because they can just go, money here and money here. Oh, let me lock it in. Oh, yeah. Oh, money here and money here. Oh, yeah. I like that. I mean, of course, talking their own book, but why not, right? So
that's what everybody does, I guess. 2022, talking the book. So, so obviously, Diamond would light love. He'd like to give me 8 rate hikes, you know? Give me some more. At a certain point in time, though, it cripples the economy. So, you know, and then we go back in the housing crisis. So they can't go crazy, because we know everybody's built on debt. Half the people got variables, you know? And if you start really jacking up those rates, like, I can make my mortgage payment when the interest rates were 1.5% or 2%, but now my mortgage is 4% and I can't afford my house. And now we just repeat 2009.
I'm saying why they can't go way up. We just went from Omicron. Well, we didn't all do right. that. No, now we're in a housing bubble and value stocks.
Spencer, we're in a housing bubble. There's no doubt we're in a housing bubble.
But no, you're in a housing bubble. Inflation, building costs. You're in a housing bubble.
I'm just in a housing disaster. So, enough. Don't even talk houses. Okay. Talk houses. Individual stock news, though. Let's move away from the macro talk and into the individual stock news. Lots of stories here today. Mr. Israel, lead the way.
Yes.
So there's so many headlines, and it's so a lot of like random stuff. And we got more guidance. I teased that yesterday. There's more guidance today. We got a lot of ratings today. We have some executive shakeups happening or being announced last night after the close. Let's just start with. Let's just start with Intel here.
Good job, Spencer.
So this is interesting. So Intel, it's always interesting when one company approaches an exec from another company. And that's what happened here yesterday after the close. They announced that Intel announced that David Zinsner, who was the CFO of Micron, is leaving Micron to join Intel. So that's always notable.
Poaching management.
Yeah.
I mean, this got a ridiculous pop last night, Joel, and I'm still long Intel. You still long your Intel?
Yeah.
I'm sticking with it just because value is the cool thing in 2022, and Intel is your classic value stock. Trading with a low multiple still makes pretty good money. That was a big move last night. Selling the rip works once again. $58.50. Come on, for Micron. Yeah. Who is this guy? Who is this guy?
CFO. Is who he is.
Pretty exciting, I guess. So
very exciting.
Intel moves up 58.5. It's given most of it back already. Micron was getting hit on it, so you saw that divergence happening. Micron's got a lot of those losses back as well. I mean, that's just algos overshooting to the best of them. The overshoots in this market are incredible. Way too hot on that. So it's long term. Am I sticking with my Intel? Sure. You know, short term, if I had on for a trade, you probably sell into that and you rebuy it. So selling rips, buying dips until further notice.
I saw that thing up at 58, and I was like,
I want to log into my long-term account and sell it.
I know. But,
we don't trade our long-term stuff.
I'm glad I added to it on the last day of the year. I mean, that's one thing. But yeah, I mean, does this make the company automatically that much more valuable in like 1 nanosecond? Adding, I thought they were gonna initially. Like I saw the move, and I'm like, oh, Mobileye must be worth $75 billion. No. You know, that's what I was thinking. I was thinking it was the next step on Mobileye because that was last time it popped. But returning to the scene of the crime, what's the top of yesterday's range? We're below the top of yesterday's range, I think. Yesterday's range was 55.31, so we're well above that. You have to use that as support. And I just don't think you're going to see that anywhere near 58 today.
I think that's a lot.
It's just it turned. And everyone's like, why didn't I sell? I literally, when I saw it at 58, I was thinking that, oh, they got to halt. This is, well, they can't halt it because it's the pre-market. But, man, just like if you had any options or anything like that, you know, the playing the weeklies. I mean, if you had the 57s, all of a sudden they're worth, you know, theoretically they're worth a buck. But still like it. And, you know, that's going to be a big bow. You might,
and remember,
might take a while to get back up there.
Remember with the options, if you've got calls and you're like, oh, I wish the stock was open so I could sell those calls, you can always short the stock against your calls and lock it in. So if you have calls, you have the 56 or the 57s on Intel, and you see the thing ripping up and you think it's overdone, get a broker that allows you to trade after hours, short the stock against your calls and lock it in. And you know what? You could have shorted 58, be rebuying here at 56 today, now you still have your calls. So, I mean, there's lots of different ways. I'm never long options, hardly ever, because I just don't buy options. But if I was trading long options, if I have long options, always trading the stock against those. So many opportunities, you know, because it's the protection. It's what it's designed to do. I mean, people just think, oh, the call, I buy the call and sell the call. The call gives you the right to buy the stock. So you already know you can buy the stock. So why you can short against it and you're hedged. So don't forget to use the options for the reasons. And it works on the other side, too. I mean, if you got the puts, you can buy the stock against your puts. Hedge yourself out after hours. Hedge yourself out on these earnings reports if you think it's overdone. Gives you a great opportunity. And sometimes the whipsaw or the reversals, and then you're right back in. You know, you made the money and cover your short, and you're back in the game. So lots of different ways to play it. But if you're a big buyer of options, don't forget you can trade the stock against those options.
Intel's still pretty low, Micron still trades at a pretty low valuation, right?
Again, remember, it's so cyclical.
I know.
So you can get screwed with that, saying, oh, yeah, the PE is 6. Well, all of a sudden they go into the wrong, you know, and obviously it's cyclical, so moves down, you know, in the cycle, and then the stock's not making money, the company's not making money. It's like, well, we're making a lot less, and you're like, I got suckered by that, you know, low PE multiple. So you got to watch the ones that are cyclical.
Yeah,
the earnings are like
there's a reason they call it value trap because it's a trap
sometimes.
High close of the move, then let's just keep an eye on this. Is 96.34, and that I believe that's the all time closing high. So I think the longer you couldn't get there yesterday, you've only closed in the 96 handle 2 times. So I know we had some people in pre-market prep plus, you know, trying to short this. I mean, I guess you got to lean on that 97.19 high, but let's keep it. I believe that's all-time closing high, 96.34 for Micron, MU. And you know how always talk about, you know, how stocks go down a lot faster? Well, look at this. This went down for how many months? You know, 8-9 months in a row, and got it back in just over 2 months. So kind of the reversal on that one.
See if I think it. Micron, you got $100 overhead. You're kind of double topping in the same area that you were back in April, May. I don't think I'd be a buyer of Micron up here.
I wouldn't be a buyer. Wrong, just a question of, do you take profits?
I think you do. I think this is the market that you got to take profits in, because I don't think we're rip roaring and going to 6,000 on the S&P. I know we had the gentleman on CNBC Fast Money last night that had his bull target of 5,500. But he also had a bearish target of 3,500. So, you know, the goalposts there, 2,000 points wide, probably going to fall in that range. I'm pretty, you know, unless we really go crazy in one direction. But, I mean, you can say, oh, yeah, we're going to 5,500, 6,000. And, you know, as a long-term investor, you always think the market eventually does drift higher. But as a trader, this market environment, 2021 was the year of take the profits or you lose them because the market will take them away from you. I think 2022 is more of the same. Shop, you get up 6, 7, 10% in your stock, you're selling it. Yeah, you know, and then you're moving on to something else. Just keep moving around, moving around, moving around, because I don't think you're going to get these sustained 50, 100%, 200% gainers.
I think that's a good overall philosophy to probably have.
Right? I think so, and for this year. 2020 was the year you regretted every sale. 2021 was the year you were happy with every sale because there was chopping around. I think you're going to be the same thing in 2022. Chop.
Yep. And on the note about Intel and whether or not it's justified, you know, rallying up to whatever 58 this morning or last night, is remember that their CEO has been at the job for like less than a year, right? I think, or maybe about a year now, right? So this is like part of that continued turnaround effort. These are the kinds of like stepping stones or building blocks that like in the moment maybe don't seem like that big a deal. Like, oh, is this really worth it for, but like, can potentially add up over time, right? And you look back 2-3 years down the line, you say, oh man, you know, the signs were there that he brought in a new C-suite, you know, they spun off this Mobileye, and bada bing, bada boom, we're at, I don't know, not 80, 90, who knows, right? So, you know, but these are the kind of things that maybe don't seem like a big deal in the moment, but can be big down.
And you know what was weird yesterday, and you mentioned it too, Spencer, was the way that thing acted yesterday. I mean, that thing was just a freight train. I don't know. Did it get
strong? It was strong.
It was so strong all day. It was like, I mean, there wasn't any news on it, right? And it was like, I'm looking, the market's going lower, that's going higher, the day session here. I don't know. Maybe someone got the memo, but you know, you see it.
It's close. Been strong just because we've been in the value-oriented market too. I mean, Intel has been drifting higher. I mean, look at Intel over the last, you know, 3 weeks, which the market has basically went the opposite direction in the last, at least in the last week. But you know, IWM's been going down for a while. I mean, Intel is moving opposite the market right now to a certain extent because of the value components. Definitely moving opposite AMD and NVIDIA. You can clearly see AMD, NVIDIA straight down first 5 days of 2022. And then you got Intel moving up in the same time frame. So there's an inverse correlation right now because Intel's the value trade, AMD and NVIDIA the growth plays. And it's been a value-oriented market. Although, like I said, you kind of saw that come off a bit yesterday. They're crowded. The value trade is crowded right now. I wouldn't be adding the value names. Value names on dips, but I'm not buying on rips. Again, always, every single strategy, very consistent. I don't like buying on rips. I like buying strong stocks on dips and selling weak stocks on rips. It's kind of how I'm usually playing it.
Except for your January plays.
Well, every play. So every single, all of my trading encompasses basically that basic premise that I want to own stronger stocks, but you want to be owning, you know, you're buying stocks uptrending, you're selling short stocks downtrending, but you're doing it like in the waves, you know, where it's pulling back in the uptrend, I'm buying that. If it's, you know, going up, you know, if the stock's, you know, in a longer term downtrend, 90 days trending down, I'm selling it into rallies. So, like, you know, for instance, yesterday, I would probably be selling the Cathy names into the rallies because Cathy's obviously in a significant downtrend. Now, that with that being said, at a certain point, it gets so oversold. I mean, you know, ARK in 2 months is down, what, 25%? So it's a serious, you know, it's seriously oversold. So you're kind of dangerous to initiate shorts at this point in time. But, you know, would I be more inclined to sell long into it? Yeah. As opposed to saying, okay, oh, I want to go and buy my Palantir now. This is the time. Trying to call that bottom. Maybe it was the bottom yesterday in PLTR. It looked like a washout low. It could have been. But you're really trying to be a hero there too. $15.50, $16.50. Think about all my January plays that I was absolutely wrong on, Joel. I went right against that basic premise that I was trying to be a hero and say, I can call the bottom on this. Calling the bottom, you get it sometimes, and you're really well rewarded when you get it, but most of the time you don't. And trying to be a hero, buying, you know, some of those momentum names, thinking the January effect would create it, it was just too much and the technicals overpowering it.
I was just going to say, you went to your seasonality playbook on that one.
I did, and I went against, but I went against those basic, you know, trends. And you know what? You could have, you know, looked at some other trades and said, well, if you would have went, and obviously value is, you know, what we missed, you know, it went, the 2022 went to the value market right away. But you could have seen some other stocks were breaking trend, like a Viacom, you know, would have been a good one to buy at the beginning of 2022. And it's already up like 10% in 2022. So you got to have buckets of stocks. You know, take your buckets of stocks, put it in value, put it in growth, first of all. Understand which buckets it's in. And then you can see the separation. And then there's all those other plays, you know, the technicals. Well, this value stock, the chart looks like hell, so maybe I'm not going to look at that one. But if I want to buy value stocks and the stock's going up like this, I'll be buying dips on those. So that's kind of how I approach it.
They stuffed the Viacom upgrade yesterday. Who was that? Someone, you know, we talk about like the upgrades and different market conditions. Well, that Viacom, who upgraded it yesterday?
Somebody did.
We're going to the upper left here. You know, this was your pre-market action.
It was Deutsche Bank.
Yesterday. Deutsche Bank, man, they got that right in the kisser. Look at that. Someone just came in. Couldn't take out the pre-market high. Maybe a little market dynamics working in that.
It was
one
value day. Coming off yesterday. So at the open, I actually tweeted out before the open, I believe I tweeted it out just to be careful because we're so overbought on value. It's eventually going to be a rug pull here. And there was. And Berkshire Hathaway opened up near the highs. And it, you know, that's your value indicator. So if you want to know what's happening with value stocks, watch Berk. It opened right at the highs, and you can see 322, and they took it right down in that first 25, 30 minutes. So they hit it down basically 2%. The banks, which were all trading significantly higher in the pre-market, all pulled back significantly. So, and you started seeing just, you know, counter to that market, you actually saw ARK start to catch a bit after that. They sold everything off the hop, and then they started to have some separation there. So, and then by the end of the day, they're buying everything. They go, FOMO, I'm going to miss the bottom. Don't worry.
Do you trade Brickby much?
You get another shot.
Do you trade Brickby much, Brickby?
All the time.
Have you been doing your opening fair value orders as much?
You know, that's tough. It's been tough because if you're just doing it blind, you got to cherry pick them. Because if you're just blindly throwing up what's, you know, oh, this is opening above fair value, it doesn't encompass, you know, the growth, the value, you know. So all of a sudden you're like, oh, yeah, well, this opened too high. Oh, it's a value stock, but it's going to rip my face off now because they're buying value. So I do it, but I don't do it automated like right now because the market environment isn't allowing that to really be that profitable. And what it Joel means is there's, you know, basic automation strategies. You got the S&P's open up 1%. The average stock's going to open 1%. So if the stock opens, you know, down with no news on it, it should pull up to where that fair value is. That's not working because there's so much, you know, rotation happening right now. So it's better with the buckets, you know, like the value bucket, the growth bucket, keeping Burke, you know, you see Burke start rolling over. Okay, I'm going to start hitting some of the other stocks in that value bucket. You see ARK start getting bid. I'm going to buy some of those other stocks in that growth bucket. And, you know, I'm not saying you cannot buy any ARK stocks. You know, we're always talking with different, you know, hats on. As a day trader, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, you can look at your little trends, you know, and we talk day trading strategies every once in a while, but a lot of people like talking swing trading more on this show. So that's why we kind of tend to focus in that time frame, you know, looking out, what's the stock and where do you think it's going the next week? Where do you think it's going in the next month? A lot of times, you know, just from order flow, you can say, I think it appears it's going to go up in the next few minutes. And, you know, so you jump in there for a quick scalp. But, you know, that's different style of trading.
All right, let's move on here. We got a few other movers to hit on, and then we can get to our guest in a few minutes. But let's talk Rivian. Rivian, they had previously guided that due to supply chain problems, they were going to fall short of their original delivery estimates for the year. They came out with those numbers yesterday. They delivered, I think it was about 1,000 cars versus their 1,200, their original 1,200 car goal. Yeah. But more importantly than that, they said, oh, by the way, our COO retired last month, which is the first we knew the market had heard of that. So the combo of delivery numbers that I guess they had already tempered expectations there on the one hand, and on the other hand, the COO resigning. You know, for a growth company like Rivian to lose someone like a COO is a bigger deal than it would be if, like, Intel lost their CEO.
So early.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, like, you know, why all of a sudden you're leaving and, you know, this, and as to questions of, you know, well, you're not feeling that confident in this business or what?
Right. So, how old is this guy? Do we know?
No, I can.
The only reason I say, because I don't want to, like, it, you know, if it's like health reasons or family reasons or whatever, I don't want to you know,
he's
I don't
retiring.
Know.
He's retiring, Rich, probably in any regard.
Yeah,
this he is made his money. He's gonna go buy an island. He's gonna go buy an NFT island and retire happily.
The only reason I'm saying thing is Oculus goggles on. You know, I wonder if his stock's gonna get hooded.
Well, the company said his retirement was planned for months. So
really,
no, I like okay. that verb.
How old?
I don't know.
It wasn't a good verb. I agree. No, I'm just saying this is like get me out, man. I'm you know like I'm done. Like I went through all this IPO. I think the stock's worth. You know, I see Harry Turkish saying 40, 45. I mean, I don't know what the value is, but it just.
You can't put your hat on this one. This is a pure growth play. You're going to say it's going to grow. Don't try to crunch numbers, you know, and come up with when this thing's going to be profitable or any of that crap. You just got to look. If momentum starts to get a bid, if ARK starts to get a bid, Rivian a follow, this stock always seems to lag. So it's actually a good candidate to just watch what's happening with the other momentum stocks. You have one number. The big number is 75.13. That's the all-time low. Yep. That obviously has to hold. I think with the turn in growth in yesterday afternoon, that this dip might get bought, but it's not necessarily it's going to get – nothing's 100%. I would say what to do at yesterday's low too, 77.65. It's holding up fairly well for some bad news. So I'm not saying I'm putting this in the long-term portfolio. I'm just saying if you wanted to take it for a trade, you stop yourself out at the low of 75. So if you're buying at 78, you risk 6-7%, you know, saying that it might bounce and you stop yourself out. I'm not doing it just for the simple reason is that I'm just not into buying growthy names right now.
$20 under the IPO low, right? It opened at 106.75, it hit 95.20, and then went to 179.47. So 2-for-1 stock split here. I don't know. I think you might be better off like picking like a high level and say, oh, if it gets above this level and holds, then trying to pick a bottom in this one. I mean, but you never know when they're going to deliver like 1,500 cars in a quarter. And that would be just, a massive increase, right?
Yeah, I think he's like 55 years old or somewhere thereabouts.
Okay, good job.
He's not super young. I stalked his LinkedIn, for those wondering.
Thank you.
How I figured that out. What else this morning is interesting? There's a lot. We had some more guidance. As I said, Abercrombie & Fitch was out with their guidance. It was not great. And
what a weird move off this. Give us the guidance. Give us the numbers because we want to talk the price action on this one.
Okay. They guided for net sales for last year to be in the range of up 19 to up 20% year over year. And they said that for the fourth quarter, net sales up 4-6% year over year. That looked like it was that looked like it was better than the prior numbers.
Were the algos reading on this? Because they absolutely hammered it off the hop. And when this broke, 32.35, this thing went down into the 27 handle. This thing lost over 10% right on those headline, right on that headline guidance numbers. And then, I looked at it like 5 minutes later. I was like, it's green? I'm like, it hit my filters, and I never looked at, you know, I wasn't, you know, it's a busy time. It came out right at 4 o'clock, but I just saw it hit my filters. Like, oh, they're hammering Abercrombie & Fitch. And I saw it trading down. Like, I can look at the chart now and say, I didn't see it trade down at 27 and change, but it looks like it did trade there. I did see it trade under 28. So they hammered it, or under 29. They hammered it. And then 5 minutes later, it's in my up filter. And I was like, what? So, man. Some algo read that dead wrong, lost a lot of money on it.
This was, Dennis, this was a 1, 2, 3, 4 minute move from 28. I just drilled down to the
28 to 36
in 4 minutes.
In 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. I got
a 20% move.
I went
10% up, really, basically. Wow. Overshoots everywhere. These algos, I don't know how half these algos make money. I think a lot of them absolutely lose money. There's a lot of algorithmic traders that absolutely don't know what they're doing. And that's a great opportunity for a discretionary trader. And you know, and if you're listening and you're just, you know, sitting at your desk, discretionary trader is a human being pointing and clicking. And that is, you know, like just using a little bit of logic and saying this is stupid or this is stupid. There, you know, I make a lot of money just saying this is stupid. going the other way. And sometimes I'm the stupid one, but more often than not, I'm not the stupid one. So that's why, you know, I'm consistently profitable. So just playing against dumb money. That's crazy moves, man.
That's crazy. I'd say, you know, you made a new low of the move yesterday at 30.86, and then you kind of had a strong close. You're still up 40 cents. I would say if the guidance is good, then it's going to catch a bid here. Hold the close, you know, 32.35, also the high, 32.68. And is this going to be like a continuation candle here, right, where you close near the high, not really much of a gap, and then you start to move up. But if this thing, opens up and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, can't hold that 32.68 and it's red, I don't know if you'll get down to your 30.86, but this is one I'd be keeping. If you think it's rallying off this news and continue to rally, you're buying the open. You want to see that follow through, maybe get right back above 33 and keep on going. Next daily high, 33.77.
Shake Shack just came out at the top of the hour as well as guidance, but they said that their Q4 sales guidance was going to be, or Q4 same store sales up 20% year over year. Yeah, duh. You're comparing Q4 of last year to Q4 the year before. The year before was brutal. But they also, I guess, said their fiscal year sales last year are going to come in above the estimate. So anyway, Shaq is trading higher.
Oh, you caught some people selling that breakdown there yesterday, yep, and that did not happen. Now you get the news that anybody's shorting through that breakdown, they're choking on it now. Major resistance 75 just stands out like a sore thumb. Lots of tops near that whole area. We're a buck away from there. I don't know where it's gotten the pre-market. I guess it's right here. So I'd say that's your first point of resistance here. But I'd probably be more inclined to buy pullbacks and sell this rip on this one.
Spencer, remember when that thing first opened? We could see it from the office.
Lines around the corner.
We used to, because we could see that from, or I could see that from my old perch there on Woodward Avenue. Dennis,
I just know you took me there, Joel, and it was $13.
And you were still
hungry. For the hamburger fries. And
I wonder what it costs
now. Maybe we did have a milkshake. It was 13 or 14 bucks. That was before inflation kicked in. It's probably $20 for burger fries.
I have to go
and
today and do some research. Is that what you're
saying? Yes, Spencer. Yep.
Too much money, man. I know, and that story's still been hot. Whatever, but long term, I don't know. I don't know how you pay that kind of money for a burger and fries.
Little burger. Dennis gave you that 75. I'm not seeing a lot at 75. I've seen something at 75.40, but I just would keep my eye on right here, right now, because the 4-day high is 74.09. You're right here. So, yeah, maybe you can press through there, but first things first, if you expect the Shaq to be up, you know, 9%, 10%, boom, you're going to go 74 bid here, and then you got air up to 75.40.
Then you had Big Lots guidance, too, if you're doing them all, Spencer.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot more than that. There's Big Lots.
A Big Mac's not $8 now, is it?
Maybe in Canada. Yeah. Probably in Canada. I don't think so. I've never seen $8 Big Mac.
That's what someone said.
I think the Big Mac in Canada is like over $5 now. So you're, what are you, $4 probably in the States?
I don't know.
I've never seen $8 Big Mac. Man, I don't know what country you're in, EKS, but holy cow. I'd be protesting. I think you start a protest outside the McDonald's.
I'll be right back. I am going to go ask Luke how much. Yo, Luke, how much is a Big Mac? Do you know?
$4.
I think it's like five and a quarter.
You said he didn't know how much a Big Mac was. That was just.
How does he not know how much a Big Mac?
I don't know.
I ate one a little while ago. I think it's like just under. I think it's like $5.50 in Canada.
I thought surely if somebody would know, is Luke. But
I do buy 2 all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions, and a sesame seed bun.
Not very nice, Joel.
You could get that.
Remember the song? Is that the song?
That is the song.
No, that was a slogan that if you could say it in less than like 3 seconds, you got a free Big Mac.
Anyway,
if the Big Mac's gone to $8 in the last couple of weeks, we got problems. There's serious inflation then.
Anyway, let's go to Big Lots.
$5.69, they're saying. $7 in Switzerland's always expensive. I've been to Switzerland. It was like $6 10 years ago in Switzerland. That's expensive country.
All right, Big Lots.
Somebody said it's $8.67 in Canada. That's got to be the combo, the Big Mac combo.
The large combo.
No way.
With their healthy fries now. Their fries are healthy, right? Because they cook them in something like this.
I should reopen my Quiznos. The $10 subs killed me because nobody wanted to pay $10 for a sub when I had that 15 years ago. And now, you know, now it would work. $10 subs would work now.
Wait, yeah, Dennis, you'd be doing a lot of deliveries.
In all seriousness, how's the French fry stock doing? LW.
What the
That's
heck?
A French fry stock?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, potatoes.
Lamb Weston sells French fries?
It's potatoes. Oh. Isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I've traded it. I don't even know it's French fries.
It's the potato company.
You're probably right. Here's something I've traded for years and I still...
Yeah, it's potatoes.
I've always just thrown in the food stock bucket.
It's a French fry.
Oh, yeah, it is. Look at that. Major Fitz French Fries. The French fry company.
It's a French fry stock.
The French fry stock. I didn't know that. I always just had it in the food bucket. It's frozen products, but it's mainly potatoes.
Yeah.
French fries.
Fun fact.
What a tangent. Holy man.
Today we all learned. Anyway, screw it. Let's just bring on our guest. Jeffrey Hirsch is the editor-in-chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. Joining us, he's also the chief market strategist of the Probabilities Fund. Let's bring him on the show. Jeffrey, how are we doing today?
When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search. But what if you could get rid of the search and just match? You can with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. In the minutes I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/prep. Just go to Indeed.com/prep right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/prep. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Great. Good morning. How's my bandwidth today?
You're good.
Bandwidth is good. Bandwidth is good, Jeff.
Jeff. You're off double secret probation here. So.
I mean, I had my partner over at the home office rewiring stuff.
Just for us.
What's that?
Just for us.
Well, I was having some trouble uploading something to my blog post when the family was home watching stuff on Netflix that other evening. So, you know, it happens.
Jeff, go ahead.
Santa Claus, it looks like Santa Claus did come to town.
Yes.
But then he left town very quickly. What is your thought process here? Is this a dip to buy then because he came to town? Does that mean it's probably going to be a stronger year and we're just getting an opportunity here? Or because he left so quickly, does that concern you?
Well, it concerns me, but we've got to wait for the full month January barometer. Still holds water, especially in combination with Santa. And, you know, when it's the three of them, as I think we discussed with, the first 5 days, Santa Claus rally and the January barometer, 90% of the time, 31 years, you know, you get the year up. But when you get up Santa, down first 5 days, and then, you know, you are able to squeak out an up January, six times out of the what? I just did a post on it. I don't know if you guys want to pull that up. There's some nice tables there.
Sure.
On the blog. You can go through Twitter if you got the.
Yeah,
or
I
just
got
go
it.
To StockTradersAlmanac.com. But
got it.
You know, when the Santa Claus is up and the first 5 days are down and the January barometer is up, that's, you know, there's six of those times. Five out of six, you got an up year. Only 01 was down when we had 9/11 and that sort of thing.
This guy.
Yeah.
All right.
If you get the down, down, as you can see, yeah, there's a nice picture of the old almanac back from. Those red lines are drawn with the computer, not on that lovely
1973. Ancient. Is that when it started?
No, no, no.
When did you start? When not?
The 68 is the first edition. 68. Back in 67, he came out with that. I was one and a half. He actually started the whole company when I was in utero, as we say in the family.
So okay, so
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, no. So just like, what is? So
it's overall, concerning.
Yeah, it's concerning. Okay.
If January can show us that if the market can show us in January that things aren't all that bad, you know, I think we're looking at more of our base case scenario in our annual forecast, which, you know, is definitely more tempered than last year, but more in line with, you know, mean reversion that you tend to see after these big years in a row. Though gains do beget gains, you know, you got big years followed by big years and that sort of thing. But, you know, we're looking for about the year finishing up 5 to 10% Dow or S&P. NASDAQ, you know, back in December, we're thinking it's going to be a little bit weaker. And we're seeing that sort of rotation that everyone's talking about now. But if you look at that chart that I did, I think it's on the blog too. It was in our annual forecast. It's got all the midterm election year patterns.
This guy? No. No.
No. Let me see if I can direct you quickly.
I grab it.
Proper. It's like got nice colored lines. Yeah, it's the one down below it. Midterm volatility, the January 5th.
Yeah, I got you.
So this chart also comes out of the almanac. You know, we got the 22 handy. Right? See that? How it's right there on the side of the desk, ready to be reached for?
Look at that.
Yeah. So, yeah, so this chart, I initially put this in a less colorful version in the almanac when I did it. Whoops.
Let's try this.
Back in July when we went, June 22nd, when we went to press. So this is our roadmap. And the red line, which is the second year of a new Democratic president or the first mid-term year of a new Democratic president, shows a little unsavory chart there. But basically, you're looking at this little dip here in January, not unheard of. The shape is similar on all of these. Remember, the black line is all years, not a midterm year, and the sort of brighter blue is all midterms, and you can see the other labels there. But you're looking for, you know, a little weakness in the beginning, a rally to the end of the best 6 months in April. And then that weak spot of the four-year cycle, the Q2 and Q3 of the midterm year, is very prevalent, very apparent right here. And then you get a, you know, a rally to the close where that's the beginning of what we call the sweet spot of the four-year cycle, with a midterm low to the pre-election year high, or the Q4 midterm year, Q1 and 2 of the pre-election year. But it even goes beyond that, you know. There's this historical average gain from the midterm low, wherever it might be. You see it sort of averages out around June or late October there on this chart, or somewhere in the, you know, end of Q2, end of Q3. And Dow is about, 48.5% average gain going back to 1914 from the midterm low to the pre-election year high. NASDAQ, 70% average going back to 71 from the midterm low to the pre-election year high, whenever that may be. I'm not sure we're going to get all that 70 this year. NASDAQ's, and all the tech stocks have had quite a run. But this is, you know, and I also want to make sure people realize this is one of our tools. You know, I know we're the seasonality people, we're the cycle people, but you don't base your whole investment outlook or your whole investment strategy or investment decisions or trading decisions on some seasonal indicator. It's a backdrop. It's a foundation. It gives you a feel for what the market is, but you've got the Fed. You know, you've got inflation. You've got Powell's, hearing today, confirmation hearing. And, there's this COVID thing. You got, you know, we thought Ukraine was the issue, but then I see some stuff going on in Kazakhstan. Who knows what's going to happen up in, North Korea or Iran or whatever. I mean, you've always got these geopolitical factors out there, which is, you know, the black swans or the sort of the, non-systemic issues or the exogenous events. And, we've got to see where this economy, you know, can, if it can stand on its own without the Fed Kool-Aid.
We're on the line with Jeff Hirsch. He's an editor of the Stock Traders Almanac, taking over from his father, Yale. And I just, you just kind of touched on the question that I had for you. You know, doing it all these years, you have all these historical patterns, and then, you know, you have a year like 2020 and 2021. I mean, did you just keep the blinkers on? And because, you know, what was the playbook for a pandemic and the price action then? Did you feel the urge to deviate at all, or did you make any exceptions to the model, or you just kind of say, hey, you know, this is what history has shown and sticking with it?
Combination. I mean, we have the models, you know, you're the best 6 months and worst 6 months, best 8 months, worst 8 months, you stick with that. But with the ETFs that we trade for the sector seasonalities and the stocks that we pick using our fundamental screen with technical analysis, we have stops on them, you know, and we look for different companies. We actually picked up some of the airline stocks there down at the lows in March, April. We looked for some, you know, dividend plays. We ended up getting into Verizon, AT&T with the big fat dividends there. And that's one of the things we do in the worst months anyway, is looking for stocks and sectors that are in the, that do well in the worst months, plus have some sort of a dividend or, you know, safe, you know, safer defensive type of position. So yeah, it is a deviation. You got to call an audible from time to time. I mean, you have a system that you stick with, but it's not entirely everything that you're trading, you know, it's not everything that you're investing in, and you've got stops and you've got, you know, rules that to get you into things that, you know, are attractive and look good on the charts, as well as have good fundamentals and are seasonally situated. So like the tactical switching strategy, you know, in and out of the diamonds and spiders and cubes and IWMs on our MACD buy and sell signal, that you stick to. But the other aspects of it, we do use some, you know, some audibles and do make some other calls on it.
And just as far as you mentioned, the airlines there been holding up these reopening stocks. Is there any seasonality or anything in the Stock Traders Almanac for, you know, for these stocks over the next few months? Because they, I mean, despite everything that's been going on, I mean, I just looked at Delta. Of course, it has earnings coming up. So anything you're seeing in like the airlines or the cruise lines is on a seasonality basis?
No, we're out of those positions. Okay. I don't see a seasonal trade there. I think those stocks are going to be under pressure for a little while longer until we can get normalization on this COVID thing. And if you look at the seasonality of COVID, which I just happened to see, maybe I was watching Shep Smith or something last night for a few minutes, that had a chart of these January spikes. I mean, yep. It's a statistical data set of two, you know, right. 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but we're seeing a similar pattern from last January, but I think that, I mean, that's a little tangential there, but you know, cruise lines, airline stocks, not touching them. We're looking at some, you know, some of the things that are driving the economy, and we don't necessarily look for themes. We let the numbers, when we look for stocks, the fundamental screen that we have, tell us what's, you know, what's happening out there. I mean, years, right. Like a few years back, we ended up having Scott's Miracle-Gro come across our list for no reason. And we realized a couple of issues later when we looked at what was going on. Oh, they just bought some hydroponic, outfit, and they're doing things for the cannabis industry. You know, we're looking for companies that have acceleration of revenues and earnings growth, good valuations, decent technical picture, and a relative strength that's not way ahead of the market or way below it, kind of just, you know, cruising along a little quietly under the radar of Wall Street, and that aren't followed by a whole lot of analysts, so that when these solid 10-Ks and 10-Qs, these you know, fundamental reports come out and keep coming out, then people will jump on that bandwagon and see something that we saw and try to get on there. I jokingly call it pre-canned slim, you know, the William O'Neill stuff, which I speak to those guys too. But, you know, we try to do something that other people aren't doing. I don't want to be out there battling with the wirehouses over Amazon and Facebook and that stuff. So I'm looking for things that are off the radar.
Jeff, out of curiosity, what was the last thing you bought or sold?
Me personally, or in the newsletter portfolio?
Either or.
Last thing I bought was XLE. the oil spider, which is part of our one of our seasonal trades. That's the oil stocks. Went against me for a little bit, but now, I mean, I forgot. I didn't see where it was.
They're moving up, yeah.
It's up over 60.
It's not against you anymore. It's going straight up.
Yeah, I bought it. Our buy limit, let me just look at it. I have it on the sheet here. Where's my – there we go. Our purchase, our recommendation price back in November ahead of the seasonality was $57.65. I think I got it right around there. I also own the Qs personally and the IWMs based on our, best months trade. Two stocks that we put out to like a couple of groups that asked us for stock picks for the year out of our mid-cap portfolio, A10 Networks, A-T-E-N. And I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but I think it's Pacira or Pacira Pharmaceutical, PCRX. Those are two that... when I said, hey, give us your two top picks for the year, we gave those out there. Last year, we had LeMaitre Vascular and I think we got out of the other one. Avid? Was it Avid, I think it was? We may have sold
Yeah, you're
one.
Definitely not going to be battling the analyst on those stocks.
No. Why? If I want to battle I just buy the Qs. And that's they're all in there, right? That's the IRA portfolio, and then the trading account of these stocks that we find. I mean, we've developed a screen over the years. It's, I don't know, it's just done. The numbers are a little bit incredulous if you look at the hypothetical newsletter portfolio. But there's some solid stocks, right, Joel? You like them?
Jeff, there was a question in the chat about just value cycles. Do you have any data on how long value versus growth that outperformance historically lasts?
I don't have that. I'm not sure that it's really a pattern there. I know I'm hearing that on the news. The value stocks are holding up right now. It's a rotation. Yeah. It's not something you can necessarily chase. You just look, as we do, we look for value all the time in our stocks. And we combine those disciplines, the seasonality, the fundamentals, the technicals, and the sentiment into getting into stocks that are under the radar.
Yeah.
All right. Jeffrey Hirsch, editor in chief of the Stock Traders Almanac. Jeff, always a pleasure. Thanks for coming on and talk to you again soon.
Appreciate you guys.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Talk to you soon.
Have a good day.
I almost forgot to mention Illumina in the guidance parade because they had guidance out last night in the stock. Popped off like ILMN.
Were they at the conference?
I saw this last night, and then I wrote it down, and then I forgot to bring it up this morning. But anyway, were they at the conference? Yeah, most
it's
likely.
Probably where it was.
Most likely. And they gave some guidance there. And it
wicked reverse. That's a candle too. That's catching people too. I mean, there's these undercuts and rally, Gilmore Rally style happening in a lot of these stocks right now. So maybe Gil's having a pretty good time because he likes to buy those undercuts. You're seeing it here too. Obviously, this is moving up on a headline now as well. But I mean, this stock traded down 346 yesterday, and then closed right near the highs. And then obviously, I get news after the bell. Now it's ringing higher, 381, 382. You're into a resistance area now, though. I would say so. If you're coming in now, I mean, you're chasing up 10-15%. I mean, it's exact opposite of what I do.
390. I mean, there's nothing there. That's your 2-day high. It was also a high back in December. So that would be another target, $7.50 away. You can use that. Also, just hold the kind of hard to draw a fib because I guess I'll go from this ridiculous high here. I'm a little bit off. It's a little bit higher, but keep an eye on 390. That's your level of the day.
All right, it's 8:50. Let's do some ticker time. Drop your tickers for us. In the
why are we tanking, Dennis? What are you seeing? Anything out there?
Why would we rally that much? 2 days, I mean, you're going to get some profit taking here eventually. What I'm saying is if you're a money manager and you got some stocks yesterday and apparently every freaking person that's interviewed on CNBC was buying the dip yesterday.
Yeah.
I know. They're always buying the dip after the days that we rally. You're probably saying, okay, well, my stock just went up 5-6% ahead of the Fed. Do I really want to hold through what Powell might say this afternoon? So I think, you need to get an overnight rally of another 20 handles. It was a gift. So I think the market will be a little hesitant ahead. We don't know. Now, Powell might say maybe he gets a little more dovish in his talk. you know, obviously the questions afterwards in the question session. Maybe he says something that, you know, the market likes. Maybe he says something that spooks the market. You know, it's a binary event, really, because we don't know what's going to come out of his mouth. You know, and when you're doing a Q&A, half the time they prep for this stuff a little bit, Spencer, but a lot of times they say stuff that maybe they don't want to say either. Think about the Pfizer interview yesterday. You see the Pfizer CEO interview on Yahoo Finance? And these guys interview all over the place, but he came out on the vaccines and said, the first two vaccines aren't offering any protection against the variant. He said none. He said offering, you know, and then he said the booster is helping. But I'm sure he'd like to take those comments back because, you know, obviously anti-vaxxers are all running with it. I saw it all over my Twitter feed last night, that clip, the 30-second clip. And I mean, it's just a Q&A, and he said that. And then maybe, you know, that is the truth, maybe. But, you know, I look at that, you know, and obviously, you know, sometimes people are being interviewed. They want to say stuff they don't want to say. I mean, we do a live show all the time. Sometimes something pops out of my mouth that I don't want to say too, but you know, you're doing a live show, you're thinking on the fly. Well, sometimes things come out that you don't want to say.
Right. And they do prepare. I mean, at the Fed, for example, they do prepare a lot for sure.
And he's, you know, don't kid yourself, Powell, 99% of the time probably is not going to say something he doesn't want to say, but he's a little more easygoing. Like you never get like Auntie Jeanette. She was never saying stuff like, you know, they're very scripted. Powell's a little more loose. Don't you feel like he's a little more loose
definitely,
when he's talking?
Definitely.
So, you know, there's always that possibility that he just says something that spooks the market. So I'm not surprised. If I'm a money manager. I bought the dip yesterday, going back to the original question, Joel. I think I'm taking profit.
That's a good call.
The meeting.
Yeah.
Why take the risk through it? You know, obviously, if you're holding, you're holding. You had stocks. But he bought some stuff yesterday. It's up 5, 6, 7% in a day. I take the profits because what if he says something that spooks the market?
Yeah. All right. Let's do some more questions, tickers from the chat. There's a bunch flying here. Somebody asked about IIPR. This is the cannabis REIT, right? I believe. And
I don't follow it.
Yeah, it's cannabis, but
it's like a cannabis REIT.
It's also a REIT, so you know it's a little bit of both. But
well, they must have some other stuff in there because that hasn't been hammered like so. It's got a 2.82% dividend, so it obviously doesn't own a bunch of cannabis stocks. Must own. It's the properties behind it, is what you're saying?
Yeah.
I don't follow this company at all. It's an ugly chart.
I've seen worse. It's had a big run up. It just got whacked over the last few days. So, higher probably since the Powell stuff. I'll just go to the monthlies on this one. I don't know anything about the company either, but you hit 210.63 yesterday, 211 with a monthly low. If you're leaning, I'd lean on that. I want to have absolutely nothing to do with this stock if it takes out that 210.63, settled in the lower area. But there you go. On the monthlies, it's telling you under 210, you're looking under 200. And then any battle back here, any rally on this thing, you're going to have people just peeling
out. It's oversold, you know. You could get a dead cat bounce. I mean, that's what I think you saw in the market yesterday to a certain extent, was just technical bounce. I mean, it was a hell of a bounce. But again, you know, some stocks have just been massively oversold. Not so much your mega caps, but there's a lot of stocks that have been fairly oversold. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that you're going to get a bounce every once in a while.
Super SPAC Man asked, Joel, are you still sipping on some tea, meaning AT&T?
Still got it. Bought a chunk bad and bought a chunk. Did a little shopping on the last day of the year.
Brown average down.
Yeah,
Joel.
It's you know, I still, the dividend is still an okay dividend. So whether inflation will eat that up, but now getting a little capital appreciation on it. So yeah, I'm not doing anything with this one. Now, I will say, if you're trading it on the short term here, I should have taken that. Well, no, I still wouldn't have won that bet with Triple D, but I know you were thinking 20, 25.5 solid. I was thinking for coming to 23.5. It didn't. Big level. I mean, you're going to have to get through 27, and you got two highs ahead of that. So short term, you got a mound of resistance at 26.80.
Terrible company benefiting from the value market right now. That's the reason it's going up. I don't think it's anything to do with the company. I'd sell it. I think when value turns, AT&T will lead the charge down.
Our fan, just to update everyone on the team, status quo. Mitch is still feeling under the weather. Enver appears to be doing a little bit better. But thanks for asking. Things are status quo here. Dennis seems like he's feeling better today. Which
I never have got sick. My wife's got a sore throat. She still has a little bit of a sore throat, but she's not getting worse. So maybe it is just a sore throat. Like I said, we had some COVID exposure 4 days ago. We've been quarantining just because we had direct exposure with somebody who's tested positive. So I'm doing the whole quarantine thing right now, just sitting back. But right now, so far, so good. Two kids are good. I'm good. Wife's got a sore throat, but maybe I'm hoping it's not going to turn into be something worse.
Good stuff.
Yeah, you guys are so sick. I mean, you made me feel sick yesterday. And I'm not even
Mitch
sick.
And Edward. Mitch is feeling it.
He's hurting.
Is he hot in the background or he's certain?
He'll be on live training next, but his problem also is he's not hurting. He's not sleeping. So it's like that's why he's I told him to take the day off, but he's like, what else am I going to do? Just sit there and not sleep? So like might as well just do something, right? Talking about the market. So he'll be on our next show, but he's definitely feeling it.
I was feeling a little down. I went and hit the gym for 45 minutes and then
you're a machine, Joel.
When you get to be my age, you got to work out a lot, man.
Does the Peloton get any use from anybody anymore?
Yeah.
Peloton update. Lisa was on it. She still uses it.
She's a machine too. You don't use it at all, eh?
It's just so hard because I just can't. It's just so hard getting on that bike and thinking that I let us
but you're
let
just us biking and like going
that.
Nowhere.
Yeah. Well, no. That it has to be our in our 35 years. Well, not that old. Let's say 30 to 33 years of investing. I would say. That's the biggest stinker.
You guys were so conflicted. You wanted to sell it all the way up and all the way down. It was her stock pick though, so she had it. So Joel, I'm going to say you were right on that.
I was right
on
that.
A lot of money, but you were absolutely right on it.
Yeah, I think still our we're still the profit on our original chunk that we bought, but it was the other chunk that we bought that just screwed up more. The average.
It's not called never frown average up.
The average up.
You always regret it when you average up.
I know. And I try to do the old valuation thing like that that point, and it didn't. That didn't. Then I try to have my buddy explain it, and then didn't work. So but anyways, whatever. Dana and Emily can decide what to do with that.
Dennis, did you sell your Zynga? Someone's asking yesterday.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, I figured.
876, I believe.
All right.
So I had because I'm gonna have double take two. So I honestly didn't even do that great on it because take two got hit so hard that I had about the same amount of money in both stocks, but Take Two was down like 20%.
I know.
It wasn't even that good for me because I own both companies going, and my one company acquired the other company. So I don't know. I've still had my Take Two. I've had Take Two in there for a long time now. I think I'm averaging about $100. Should have sold it, obviously. I guess, eventually maybe it's going to end up being a loser for me too here, Joel. I'm riding this one all the way down. But I think Take Two still like, the gaming isn't going away. It's probably going to take part in the metaverse too with all the gaming and stuff. So I just, I'm sticking with Take Two.
I don't know. All righty.
I don't know long term.
We don't know.
It was good for a while.
Know anything. All right. It is not
nobody knows anything.
No one knows anything. We're going to wrap it up here. Joel, catch you later for the At the Close show. Dennis, have a great rest of your day. I'm going to hop off. I'll see you guys over on our next show, live trading with Benzinga, Mitch, Ryan, Zunaid. I will do my best to hang out for a few minutes as well. So if you would be so kind and drop us a like, I would appreciate that. We are at 306 likes right now with 1,500 people watching. If we can get to like 500 likes, that would make me a little bit happier. Just a little bit happier. Thanks to our guest today, Jeffrey Hurst. Thanks to all of you in the chat. Please remember that all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes and not for investing or trading advice. Hey, if you want to catch us on the move, we're also a podcast, right? Check us out. We're on every major podcast platform, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, whatever. Just search for Premarket Prep or Benzinga and you will find us there. Check out Benzinga Pro again, pro.benzinga.com, free 2-week trial for everyone. No questions asked. Check it out. I highly, highly recommend that. All right, I'm going to hop off here. This stream will end, redirect to our next stream, which will be starting in a couple minutes. Everyone, have a great rest of your day. Go make some money. Catch you guys later.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.